Mini episode 563 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We are going to be recapping the 2015 NFL Draft today, giving our FDH Lounge review on the process with three original FDH Lounge dignitaries. Yours truly, FDH Senior Editor Jason Jones, and good old Christopher Galloway. What we will do now, I will bring in Chris Galloway, and we'll have Jason joining us momentarily. So first of all, let's get Chris in here. Chris, how are you doing with Rick?
Doing well, Rick. Thank you for having me.
Always glad to have you on, my man. One of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries. And I will put this out there as a headline for you, and it was a little bit surprising to me when I went through this, but on both the metric of overall value for players selected in the draft, perhaps it wouldn't surprise us to know that our hometown Cleveland Browns scored first on that scale with 650 points. I think it would perhaps surprise us to know that in terms of filling needs, and it seems fairly kind of glaring that quarterback and wide receiver were unaddressed, but in terms of other needs on the roster, I don't know if this is lies, damn lies in statistics, but the Browns also scored first on that with 655 points and have a combined 1,305 points ahead of New Orleans at 872 for second. So according to our metrics, the Browns had hands down the best NFL draft this year, and I know that you had heard me bitching off air about the Browns leaving some of the needs unfulfilled. So is this lies, damned lies in statistics, or is this indicative of the fit at almost every other position that they needed to, the Browns went ahead and upgraded?
I think that you, both your complaint about the Browns draft and the quality of the Browns draft are both accurate. And that is that you're correct. They did not address some huge glaring needs, especially at wide receiver. And frankly, I would say at tight end from the offensive standpoint. But I will say that the value that they drafted, the quality of player drafted, and primarily where they drafted them, I think they did an excellent job. They clearly went in with a game plan of building depth, improving their, you know, themselves at various positions, be it on the offensive line or on, you know, the defensive front, and they achieved those things. And they also in the meantime picked up a running back out of the U, the all-time leading rusher out of the U, that should be able to help them in the short passing game that this new offensive coordinator is going to want to use heavily this season. And then they will probably rely on heavily in light of the fact that they'll. Their tight end passing options will be limited. So I think you're both.
Absolutely.
I think the Browns had a great draft. It wasn't flashy, but I think we're going to look back in a few, 2-3 years, and we're going to say, and especially when Alex Mack leaves, and we're going to say, boy, we'll be glad that we grabbed, you know, Ewing when we did, and Irvin when we did, excuse me, and we're going to be glad that we got a big run stopper in the middle in Shelton, and we also picked up, you know, guys like Orchard and Cooper. Those are the picks that people that go unsung, but that make a huge difference in the trenches where it matters. That's where you've heard me since 1999 when the Browns came back. You know, when, you know, 1999, what did I say I wanted to do with the Browns draft? You know, I wanted to do first round offensive lineman, second round offensive lineman, third round offensive lineman, fourth round offensive lineman. Now, I believe and always believe you build in the trenches. And I think the Browns are looking at this realistically, saying, we need to build there. We need to build depth there. Look what happened to us last year in injuries on both sides of the ball, how porous we got, how bad the run defense got. Look how bad the run game got once Alex Mack went down. We need depth and we need quality. And they're doing it, this regime right now, in my opinion, You know, the Manziel and Gilbert jury's still out, are doing it right. They're building in the trenches primarily. They're building depth. And you have to do that if you're going to win over a sustained period of time.
Characteristically, some very good points in there. Before I go to Jason, I actually want to follow up with you on that. And one of the points there, Duke Johnson, I think you're right about that, particularly with the extreme weakness of the tight end position, especially vis-a-vis receiving. I mean, they got some guys who can block, but in terms of receiving, not much in the cupboard. He probably will be critical on the checkdowns. But this kind of struck me in terms of eyeball test looking at this draft. You're looking at a draft where they had a lot of picks and in some instances traded back and added more to it. It seemed like a patient draft to me. And if for anybody looking for continuity out of the Browns organization, that would seem like a good thing, particularly, again, when you spend a third-round pick on Duke Johnson at what's already, in my estimation, and a lot of people I think would agree, a position of strength at running back, and the fact that, again, they didn't try to fill all the needs this year. Do you agree with that, that it seems to be from a position of somewhat confidence of this is a draft that's for the long haul, this is not a draft necessarily specifically for 2015? It would seem like that's a good thing to me anyways, if that is the case.
I agree with you, and I think they showed great discipline in this draft. I mean, too often in the past, I've been too frustrated with the willingness to burn later round picks to move up one or two slots for a guy. And most of the time, those moves have not paid off at all. I mean, I've always been very critical of those. And this year I was very happy that they refrained from that and that they clearly stuck to their board in terms of, you know, trying to accomplish their game plan. Now, yeah, they moved back up, on one occasion, but by and large, they stuck where they were to get the guys that they wanted without burning up draft picks this year or in the future. And I think that's how you build a winning organization long term. Some of that may just not bear out in this coming year. A lot of that's going to come down to quarterback play. But as we've seen, if you can stop the run and you have a great offensive line that can help you run the football, you take a lot of pressure off the quarterback. And, whether it's Brown or Manziel, if you can take all that pressure off the quarterback by stopping the run and running the ball, you've accomplished quite a lot. I mean, people talk about the Cowboys and what they're trying to accomplish, and they talk about all their weapons and Dez Bryant and all the rest of that. Yeah, they have Dez Bryant, but what did they try to do? They went out and after the draft, they signed Collins. They added depth to the best line in the NFL. And why? Because somewhere along the line, they finally decided we need to build an offensive line that is the best, and we need to have running backs that can then run the ball. We're going to take the pressure off Tony Romo. We're not going to ask Tony to win every game for us. Now, Tony can sling it. He's a great quarterback. But that's not their formula anymore. And I think the Browns, whether it's the Seahawks as well, everybody can talk about Wilson. He makes great decisions and he fits their system. But at the same time, you're not asking Wilson to throw it 42 times a game, like a Phillip Rivers. He's throwing it 23 times a game. And they want to run the football. And that's what the Browns want to do. And listen, having an identity is the first step to continuity and success.
That's a great point about the Cowboys and sort of going back to the roots of the Jerry Jones era about 20 years ago. Remember Nate Newton and everybody like that being key to Emmitt Smith in there because, again, very few successful running backs in the history of this league owed more to the success of their line than did Emmitt Smith. He was certainly no Barry Sanders in terms of making things happen himself. Then again, Barry Sanderses are pretty rare. So that's an excellent point about the old line. Let's bring in Jason Jones, our other FDH Lounge dignitary, with us here today, and FDH senior editor. Jason, again, this was a surprise to me on the metrics that we had for FDH. Maybe not a surprise that the Browns scored highest on our point system for overall value of every pick, but in terms of filling needs, they also scored highest on that while still having a glaring hole at wide receiver, quite possibly tight end also, and I know you would probably disagree on quarterback, albeit I think even you would agree that would put you in the minority there. But what are your thoughts on, let's talk about the Browns, because it's very rare for a team to sweep the board and be first on both of our metrics here, as the Browns so decisively were. Your thoughts on this Browns draft?
I'm right in line with the metrics. I've watched all these experts on TV and try to give draft grades and rank everything, and I got to say, if you step back from it for a second and really try as hard as you can to look at it objectively, I think this is one of the best drafts for a team, regardless of team, in quite some time. Maybe going back to the Jerry Reese draft where all of his draft picks contributed on a Super Bowl winning season. I'm not saying 10, 20 years, but for a while, this was incredible. And basically the way I have to set this up is we have to back off of the quarterback and the wide receiver need thing, because essentially this was the draft that people had been clamoring for years. This was the first time you can say, whether we're talking about Pettin or Butch Davis or whoever, this was the first time in a very, very long time you had to step back and look and go, they just picked the best player on the board at that point. And the thing that frustrates most of us is that quarterback and wide receiver just keeps falling, meaning that the quarterbacks as they're going off the board are not as high as they had them on their board. And here's the difficult part. We all think that we can do the job, and I'm sure some of us could. But the fact of the matter is you have to, as painful as it is, have to sit back and go, well, they've got a board, they've got a plan, and they're following it. I may have wide receiver A or quarterback B higher than they do, but they're not going to make that pick just to make that pick. And I kind of find a little reassurance in that they're not just going to go chasing a guy, which I thought was incredible. But getting back to the actual results of their draft, we all know, and it's been no secret, that I wanted Danny Shelton probably since December. So going Danny Shelton was huge for me personally, because I really do think he's everything you're looking for in that position. He seems like a good kid. And then Cam Irving, I'll be the other guy. I love the pick now, but at the time, looking at what was available, I did not think that a right tackle who may eventually become the center was the way to go with the value on the board at that time. With that said, though, again, another good locker room guy that can play every position on that offensive line. You cannot criticize that pick. And I almost go so far as to say, I don't care where to get him. I don't care if they got him at 15 or 30. Cam Irving's going to be a very good player. Where it really starts to get interesting for me is, and this is where you got to deal with your board being different than other people's, I actually have Nate Orchard ahead of Shane Ray and ahead of, Randy Gregory. I got him ahead of, there's another kid I'm forgetting. But anyway, Bud Dupree. I think that he's going to be one of those lunch pail guys. I really do. I think he's going to get in and go to work, and I think he's as good as you can hope for at that point. Then Duke Johnson is brilliant, and the question I have for you guys specifically, I heard you mentioning how this is an area of strength, and I agree with that, but I don't get the impression that Duke Johnson was drafted to compete for a starting running back job. I think they got him to be an offensive X-factor, jack-of-all-trades kind of thing, and I don't think you can look at that pick as purely a running back-only kind of position. Xavier Cooper, I'm going to be honest, I don't have a whole lot of information on guys from Washington State. Ibrahim Campbell's a nice box safety, but that better mean we're getting all of our safeties back. And Vince Maley, if you look at the field, I know everybody wanted Devontae Parker, they wanted Kevin White, they wanted Devin Smith, I get that. But if you really look at the field, there was a whole lot of jack nothing after Xavier Cooper as far as wide receivers go. And to get a guy that's 6'2", 220 pounds, runs a respectable 40, who needs a great deal of coaching and polish, I think as good as you could expect. Now, I wanted Stephon Diggs out of Maryland, but he's not a prototypical number one. He's kind of a DeSean Jackson type. So I think we've got enough small receivers And that kid from Washington State, man, are being really good. So all in all, I really think if you're finally going to get a draft where they're picking best available, regardless of position, I really don't see how you can complain until we get to the sixth round. And even then, lo and behold, the last player pick for this team is absolutely, and I hate to quote another guy, especially when I hate him, but Ifo, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his whole name, but Ifo, if healthy last year, playing in that national championship game, whether he did something or not, is a 20 to 40 pick guy. And you got him in the seventh round. So we can nitpick over, I wish we would have got Bryce Petty, or I wish we would have got Devontae Parker. But at the end of the day, I think it was phenomenal. Now, whether it's a slow build draft or we're going to see results this season, I don't know. But I think it was phenomenal on a talent versus value perspective.
Well, of the quarterbacks, I just said Brett Hundley. I'm a Brett Hundley guy based on the upside, and I think Green Bay is going to be very fortunate with him. Before I move on to the next part here, Chris, let's ask you the follow-up that Jason imposed there. Duke Johnson, somebody that might be kind of an X factor offensively. Is there a chance in your mind maybe they line him up at places additional to running back through the course of events?
I think that's very likely based on the type of player he is. He plays great in space. He's great in the, he plays great, you know, in the short bubble passing game, those dump off passes. But I think, you know, unfortunately it's, we don't know yet. I mean, I think this, you know, this offensive identity is still yet to be, fully, forged or emerged. So I think Jason's onto something. I would guess that Duke Johnson at, you know, at his size is probably not going to be your 1-3 down, you know, ground and pound kind of running back, but, you know, the occasional, but then a lot more in the passing game. So I think he's, I think Jason's right on about that.
Very possibly. Yeah, I would agree. All right. Jot this down, guys. See if any of these stats that I give you, if anything kind of lodges in your head here as being something you really agree with or disagree with. I'm going to give you here the metrics top five and bottom five. We're going to start with overall player value. This is off of Jason's top 100 overall. Top scorers, the Browns at 650 points. After that, Minnesota 550. Baltimore 508. New York Jets 496. Jacksonville 468. There's your top five. Your bottom five, Kansas City 136, Indianapolis 132, Green Bay 126, Seattle 102, Arizona 80. Looking at filling needs, and again, that was a thing where you would get the most points if you filled your number one need with a first round pick. It was a combination of what round you filled a need in and how important a need it was. Your top five in that: Cleveland 655, New England 585, Kansas City 530, St. Louis 520, Oakland 510. Your bottom five: San Diego 260, Green Bay 210, Indianapolis 200, Denver 170, and Buffalo, yes, zero as far as filling needs. Your top five and bottom five on the overall draft, combined metrics: the Browns 1305. You have to go down for second place to New Orleans, 872, Minnesota in third with 860, New York Giants fourth, 857, Pittsburgh fifth at 843. Your bottom five in the combined metrics: Denver 422, Arizona 365, Green Bay 336, Indianapolis 332, and Buffalo 152. I'll start with you, Chris. Anything that you really agreed with or disagreed with sharply out of those numbers?
I agreed. I thought the Bills had a terrible draft. I don't know what they were doing. I also didn't like the Saints draft, although I know some people have praised it. I was not a fan of the Saints draft in terms of what they did. I suspect that, you know, the Packers on the need scale take a hit because of the Hundley pick, because it's not a need. But, as we've seen, you know, to put him on the shelf for 2 or 3 years and learn the system – you know, God forbid if Aaron Rodgers was to get injured or to leave or, you know, who knows what, or retire. I mean, he's got a long way to go, but you never know. I agree with you, Rick. That could be a pick that could pay dividends down the road. You know, first round
choices that puzzled the hell out of me. And the one that sticks out is the Colts, you know, picking Dorsett, the wide receiver out of Miami, another player out of the U in the first round when they had huge need on the defensive side of the ball. And to pick a wide receiver when they're already rich at the wide receiver position just made no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I think they were looking at him and being a game breaker, but that was kind of puzzling there. It's funny, too, New Orleans scored very high on our metrics in terms of, I think, primarily from filling needs. But, again, this comes back to the whole thing of need versus best player available. And as far as Brett Hundley goes, I was joking with my friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology, noted Jets fan, that apparently Aaron Rodgers will be moving on to the New York Jets in a couple of years if the cycle continues with Brett Hundley taking his place. So he's got that to look forward to. Jason, your thoughts on the numbers that I rattled off there. And, again, I'd be surprised if you disagreed with too much on the value numbers, since that is, of course, based on your top 100 overall. On the team needs, that was based on my assessment of team needs in our draft guide, Pro Football Draftology 2015, which is, again, still available at fantasydrafthelp.com as a free download. But your overall thoughts on that, Jason, what you agree and disagree with out of the rankings?
Well, you know, fundamentally, I don't think I'm allowed to disagree with the rankings. But I would say I think the teams that you rattled off, both good and bad, are, again, a case study for exactly why the Browns draft was so good. Because even the teams that did well, when you look at it, are so top-heavy. You don't find many teams, I bet you can count on one hand, the number of teams you looked at and said, they got really good through five rounds. And that's just not, even with New England, who, you know, historically does very well in the draft, especially from a value perspective. Love Malcolm Brown. Trey Flowers is nice, but I'm not excited. And Trey Jackson and Shaq Mason together on that offensive line are nice picks, but I'm not blown away. Buffalo was putrid even at the top. Buffalo was so bad that when you have to look at Ronald Darby as your big blue-chip player that you pick over the weekend, you might as well pack it in and just try again next year, because that's just god-awful. Oakland was intriguing by taking Clyde Walford, the tight end from Miami, but we all know that I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on Amari Cooper being the second coming. So I think all in all, this was a very unimpressive draft in general, because not many teams really capitalized top to bottom and got great value. But as far as the rankings, I'm not going to disagree with them, because they do pan out if you look at what was done. And to the Indianapolis point, I absolutely agree with you guys. Indianapolis is a legitimate playoff team suffering from the same problem as the aforementioned Cleveland Browns, and that is, if they didn't have Andre Johnson, they'd have the most impressive, smallest wide receiver core in the NFL on paper. And I just don't know that you can win that way. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. I love the Hundley pick to Green Bay, a la Aaron Rodgers under Brett Favre sort of scenario. But, you know, even the good teams on this list didn't do that well, I guess is my point.
That is very interesting. And what I'm wondering about, and I'll start by asking you this, Chris, because you and I have talked about this off air, the subject of, again, neither one of us wanted the Browns to mortgage the future as Browns fans for Marcus Mariota, especially, again, you're a year out from Cardale Jones being available. You got a chance for a guy with a rocket arm who looks like he's a prototype for the pro game. Next year's draft class, when you go looking at Hackenberg and Cook and some of the guys to come out there, I mean, I'm not going to start throwing around 1983 or 1999, not that 99 proved to be what it was billed to be in the end here, but do you get the sense that teams like the Browns maybe showed patience in some parts? I mean, I would put even the Jets in there, because, you know, Petty is a mid-round pick. What does it really cost them? The Jets are not precluded from a year from now going after one of the big names if it looks like neither of these guys is going to pan out. Do you think that influenced it in any way, Chris, the fact that the quarterback position is the dominant one in the league and next year right now looks like it's going to be better than this year?
Well, I think that's a combination of that and that this year's class was so underwhelming. And that, you know, enough people looked at Mariota as a nice young man, smart, but his skill set still wasn't a slam dunk as it relates to, you know, translating to the NFL. So how can you mortgage the future when you cannot be 100% sure about his ability to, you know, be your quarterback of the future? And especially then when you're that GM, you're that front office, you're that scouting department, and you're looking at next year's class, and you can look at five or six guys that you can say, boy, I like these guys better than the guys that we have this year to pick from by far. So I think you're right. I think for once, irrational males involved in sports actually acted rationally.
That doesn't happen very often at draft time here, and particularly with the imperatives from fan bases, front offices, et cetera. Jason, what say you on this matter? I mean, I'm sure you would agree that next year looks like it's going to be a more impressive quarterback class top to bottom, and especially in terms of potential franchise quarterbacks, even if there may or may not be anybody that you like as much as you like the skill set of Winston himself this year, but there was only one of him to go around, so... Thoughts on the relative weakness of this year versus what looks to be the strength of next year and how that may have affected some teams and their approach through the 2015 draft?
I'll tell you, Rick, if this was a television show roundtable, you would have seen me shaking Chris's hand. I am so over I don't even have a family-friendly term to use. I'm so over this idea that just because – a guy is the number two quarterback in the draft class that automatically makes him worthy of a very, very high-profile pick. And I'm sorry to say this, and I don't want to upset any of the Tennessee Titan fans listening, but I hope you enjoyed getting something that's slightly better than Jake Locker and paying a second-round pick for it. Mariota is a nice little quarterback, but to think that he's worthy of a top two pick is ridiculous. And when you look at the class coming out, I mean, call it a bias if you want, as I'm currently wearing an Ohio State hoodie. I think Cardale Jones, just looking at him as a prospect, has the most upside and probably, minus, you know, starting next season, which I hope he does, he may just end up being the best prospect both on the field and off. But then even after that, as you mentioned, Connor Cook, Christian Hackenberg, Dak Prescott, Jonathan Goff. I mean, you're probably going to get into the second round before we start looking at quarterbacks that aren't necessarily projected as starters in the NFL. So if the approach was that Cleveland said, or any of these other teams that just didn't go for a quarterback, looked at it and said, we have a much better chance of getting a quarterback whose skill set is as good as Mariota's, if not a little bit better, and maybe the upside is Winston, but doing it next year. And if that's the case, brilliant stroke by half the teams in the league to just not even look back. And for Cleveland, if that's the analogy we're going to use, the way I see it is, look, you got a journeyman backup, sometimes starter, who's probably going to start training camp. You got a guy that I still, as minority as it may be, I believe Johnny can make all the throws. I believe he brings something to it. But he's going to completely reform the way he approaches his job. And if that's the case, then maybe there's still some hope for Johnny. And if at the end of 2015 they come to the conclusion that Josh and Johnny – aren't the way to go, then this is the draft where you package up picks and you move up to get a Cardale Jones or a Dak Prescott or whoever it is that you've got to have. But 2015 draft was not that draft. You had one guy at the top, and everybody else, including Mariota, are a project to some degree unless Mariota went to the Eagles, which he didn't.
Hey, Rick, well, you know, I got to tell you. you know,
yeah.
You talk about Cardale Jones. I mean, is there a guy right now who is endearing himself more to a home base, a fan base, and Cardale Jones than with Cleveland Browns fans? I mean, whether it's starting a Twitter fight with Joakim Noah or showing up at every Cleveland sporting event or tweeting out to the Indians, hey, I want to throw out the first pitch, big Tribe fan. You know, Cardale Jones is doing himself he's basically guaranteeing that wherever the Browns are drafting next year, assuming our, you know, Johnny Manziel does not light the world on fire, that he'll not backslide any further than that in the first round.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that's a great point. That's very interesting. And, again, him having LeBron's back in the playoff series with the Bulls, I mean, isn't this most reminiscent, really, of when you talk about the anticipation even a year out, the anticipation of getting LeBron on the Cavaliers? He seems to be single-handedly trying to recreate that, isn't he?
Well, he is. I mean, and he's a hometown guy. Cleveland pride, and he's wearing it on his sleeve. So between his, you know, being a Buckeye and being a Browns fan and a Clevelander and a native Clevelander, I mean, he is certainly putting himself into a strong position of a long-term romance with Cleveland Browns and Cleveland fans in general. I will just say this, as much as I love his physical attributes with Jones, I do need to see next year a lot more evidence of you know, what's upstairs between the ears. I've said on this show and we've talked off the air about how, you know, in my mind, you know, the people talk about, you know, can the quarterback make all the throws? In the NFL, man, there is nothing more important about a quarterback than what's between their ears. And for me, the jury is still somewhat out on that on Jones, but, time will tell.
Great point. And yeah, again, We're going to get to see adjustments, counter adjustments. We're going to get to see all of that this year. Now that there's a book out on him from the three games, what's he going to do? And again, optimistic it's going to play out. I'll tell you this, my dad, a season ticket holder ever since he graduated from there, I never hear him say a crossword about Ohio State, but he has threatened to turn on Urban Meyer if he doesn't start Cardale Jones this year, and justifiably so. Jason, what are your thoughts on him a year out?
Well, you know how much I hate when people say we have to see it. I need to see more. I really think if you know what you're looking at, you can project out pretty well. And I guess my thought is, and I'm not challenging what Chris said at all, because there's absolutely some weight to that, is we need to see a Cardale Jones that isn't just out there relying on his God-given physical ability.
Right.
But aside from that, if Cardale Jones starts week one, and the Ohio State Buckeyes, let's say 2 weeks out from the end of the regular season, are in contention for the playoff, whether they make it or not, and he's the starter all season long, and the play that he has is as good, if not an improvement on, what we saw during the playoff run this past season, how on earth is Cardale Jones, football IQ or not, how is he not a top five pick? So the question then becomes, if he's going to be that good, if he's projected to go that high, because to me, he's the Calvin Johnson of quarterbacks. If you were going to build one, that's what he would look like, physical ability, size, a little bit. So if he's at the top, there's going to be a race to get there because you just don't have multiple quarterbacks at the top that are this good. So I think if he plays the season and they do well by any standard, I think he goes way up top. And if he goes to Cleveland, and you know, you've got another LeBron-like story. But that also opens up the possibility that while other teams may be willing to mortgage the farm to get up and get a Cardale Jones, that maybe a Connor Cook falls a little bit. So either way, it's a great quarterback class. I agree with you. It's not time to call it 1983 or anything yet. But I do think Cardale Jones does well. I think he starts the season and finishes the season. And I think that he is as touted as Winston, minus maybe the winning streak, because he just does look that good. And to me, if I had to pick, I'd rather have physical ability over mental stuff, because I'd like to think certain guys could get coached up there.
Absolutely, and that is going to be a fascinating thing to look at the whole year through. Final thoughts here, anything that we didn't cover yet as far as anything that really impressed you guys? I'll throw this out there as far as best pure value for a pick, especially early on in the draft, a franchise player. Leonard Williams going 6 to the Jets. I had him going 5 to Washington, which is lower than a lot of people did. I thought Washington would probably make a trade with somebody if Williams was still on the board, that somebody want to trade up to get him. But Williams going 6, again, don't know how he fits in, but, you know, opposing teams are probably going to rush for about 15 yards a game against the Jets with that front four at this point. So, Chris, start with you. Your thoughts, anything we didn't cover yet on the way that the teams really helped themselves in the draft this year?
I do want to comment on one thing, and that is my heart absolutely goes out to Dante Fowler and Jaguars fans.
Oh, yeah.
Because to blow out your knee in your first rookie minicamp after, mm-hmm. you know, achieving your lifelong dream and being worthy of, you know, a top 10 pick as he was. I mean, that's just devastating for that young man and for that franchise, and certainly sets them back this next season. I worry about stuff like that, and does that affect the future of football in Jacksonville? For that fan base, you know, there's already talk about the Jaguars leaving. And does that, you know, does that lead to another terrible year, depressed turnout, you know, in terms of ticket sales, and then sort of becomes fait accompli that they're, you know, they're off to Los Angeles or somewhere. So,
well, that's a Florida Gator also. That's a Gator right there, Chris. That's, you know, that's a tough thing. It's a hometown guy practically.
Hometown guy, you know, home state hero, and, you know, they've lost now a whole nother season by not having that you know, that sort of excellence in the middle of their defense. So, yeah, my heart goes out to Jaguars fans and to Fowler. That's just a terrible way to start an NFL career.
Absolutely. That's pretty horrible. Jason, any thoughts from you that we didn't get to?
Yeah, just a couple bullet points, and I'll just throw it out and let people work on it as they will. I'll echo the sentiment on Fowler. My gut turned when I heard that news. That's just bad all around. Leonard Williams to the Jets, I think, automatically solidifies the New York Jets as having, without question, the best defensive line in football. The moves that Dallas made with Gregory, where they got him, and with Lael Collins, makes them having maybe the sexiest draft. And solidifying further the best offensive line in football. I think that the Saints and the Colts didn't exactly do themselves any service. I think the Eagles, as surprising as it may seem, may have picked one player that was most perfectly suited to them in Nelson Agholor. I think Steeler fans, whether he's good or not, should be upset that they still keep picking outside linebackers in the first round. And I think that if any of the projections and comparisons are legit, off-the-field stuff or not, the Broncos, if they got the next Robert Mathis, it doesn't matter that Howerman went down and some of their other players have questions. That was a great move on their part. I think at the top, the draft had some really compelling things that let teams solidify themselves in one capacity. Is this going to be a draft we remember 10 years from now? Maybe not. But I think a lot of teams got better at the top, and I think a lot of the teams did no good with what they had to pick from.
Absolutely. It was a very, very intriguing draft as far as the way that a lot of teams were trying to both maximize value and make the pieces fit. It didn't seem to be as deep overall as 2014 was, and that forced a lot more tough decisions on the parts of teams. Again, 2016 looks like it's going to be a pretty sexy draft next year. And Walder Football at one point had the early projection of Joey Bosa 1, Cardale Jones 2. So stay tuned on that to see how that shakes out next year. That could be fascinating, looking at a potential franchise pass rusher and franchise quarterback coming off the same team. The 2015 college season will say a lot about how that goes. But, again, pleasure breaking it down, as always, with our crew of original FDH Lounge dignitaries, one of our greatest traditions convening for pre-draft and post-draft shows here. Chris Galloway and Jason Jones, thanks very much as always, fellas. Really lit it up today. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep, enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Thank you all for tuning in, everybody, to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 563.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.